But welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number as Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go right to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Tom, thank you very much for hanging on, man. What's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, the Republicans are the pro-murder and pro-death party, and that's factually true. One thing I'm going to push back a little bit with Sandy on is the fact that, you know, years ago, the owner of a corporation would make maybe 30, 40 times more than their average employee. You know, and now it's thousands and thousands of times greater than their average employee. And, you know, that cannot make a person very interested in, you know, working for someone when you have that discrepancy between someone that's really doing the hard work and someone that's sitting back and collecting the dividends check. Also, I would say that big part of the problem is that everything has become corporatized. So as an example, just take the family farm or hospitals, but take the family farm. And on the family farm, you had farmers that cared about the land. You had farmers that cared about the animals. You had cared about farmers that cared about getting food to the people. And now it's just all a big, you know, profit dollar thing. And now it's just all about, you know, who cares if we rape the land? Who cares if we do this? Because it's all about the mighty buck. It's all about greed. It's all about money. And then it's all about money and politics, because there's no regulation on any of these people because the politicians are paid off. I know I've said a lot, but it's very true. Also, I think that CJ suffers from long COVID. If he hasn't been listening to the show at all, I think there's plenty of times where we criticize the current president of the United States. And I'd like to ask him, of course, if there's anything he would criticize the past number 45 on his job in the United States. Thank you.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, I'm not sure what he's pushing back on. I don't disagree with him. I think the business model of business in America has gotten out of whack. Some of it is the result of a lack of adequate regulation. I think that there could have been greater oversight provided by the SEC associated with disclosures and shining a bright light on the income and compensation for top executives, because even the financial world believes that the compensation of top executives has gotten out of whack and is damaging the American business scene. What I was talking about was shining a bright light, which is what COVID did on how the laborers were being compensated, and independent from what they thought about what chief executives were being compensated. It's clear that the business model has not adequately been compensating its workers and has not been creating environments that are conducive to having workers in the business places where we now need them. And it's gone a long way towards promoting the shortages, which are currently the root cause of inflation. And where I was going before the break was to talk a bit about the root cause of inflation. And one of the problems that we have is an interesting one, which is that we have shortage. Inflation is the result of too much money chasing too few goods. And the Federal Reserve Bank can only focus on this question of too much money. So the Federal Reserve, when it fights inflation, does everything it can to reduce the amount of money out there that can bid for and buy products. And bid the price up on the products. Well, the ultimate effect of inflation is the price of things going up. And it can happen because there is a shortage of things, and there is then a bidding for the shortage that causes its price to go up. One of the solutions to that is to increase the supply of things. And that would be a much more beneficial effect or cause for the solution to this current round of inflation, because if we leave it only to the Federal Reserve, what they'll do is they'll have to create something that is basically a recession. Recessions are very damaging to Tom, Dick, and Mary, because it's all of the actions of the Fed are designed to reduce the purchasing power of Tom, Dick, and Mary so the price of products don't get bid up. But an even better solution is to increase the supply of products, which is done primarily by increasing the labor that is committed to providing those products. So it's win-win. The products become more numerous. Businesses earn more money. More workers earn more money. It's actually a very productive way to solve for this current round of inflation. The question is, how can we organize ourselves to focus on that side of the coin? What can government do to promote solutions to the supply chain problems so that we can reduce shortages and thereby defeat inflation? That's the hopeful side of this problem is possibly we can work our way. The problem with all of those solutions to the supply chain is much like what we were talking about in the hospital system, which is there's a time lag. You can't solve the supply chain problems overnight, but the demand side, and the Federal Reserve can do things overnight. They're slotted this week to increase the Federal Reserve borrowing rate by 0.75%. That's something you can do overnight. So my hope is that both the private scene, the corporate scene, as well as the political scene, wakes up to the fact that if they focus their attention on the supply side, we can actually solve the current inflation problem without a recession and without all the damage to Tom, Dick, and Mary.
So, Sandy, is it possible then that because once things slow down, the supply side will have a chance to catch up and you can kill two birds with one stone?
Well, the problem with that one is that the cure to inflation is recession.
Right.
And recession causes layoffs. It puts a lid on pay raises. It does all kinds of things.
Yeah, but can't the supply side then catch up during that period?
Well, it will catch up during that period, but it'll be catching painful. Up to a reduced number.
Right.
And it's painful. So I'm just saying that a less painful approach would be to focus all kinds of attention on solving the supply side problems and increasing supply so that we don't have an inflation-induced recession, which is caused by shortage. Shortage is kind of a stupid way to cause a recession. Shortage means that we fail to have our manufacturing processes keep up with demand. The kind of inflation that's caused by profligate government expenditure is a situation in which the amount of money bidding for a supply which is adequate gets inflated too much, and the prices get bid up on things which are not, in fact, in shortage.
So Sandy, I kind of want to flip to a different subject, and that's the drug prices. While we're talking about health and all those things, the Democrats are making this final push to rev up high stakes, final push to lower drug prices. And you would think, Sandy, that the lowering drug prices would not be something that would be, either Democrat or Republican. Republicans also need, lower drug prices. That shouldn't be something that should have anything to do with whether you're a Democrat or Republican. But this goes back to what we're constantly talking about. The drug prices need to be lowered, period. We know that they're lower all over the world than they are here. And the question should always be, since so many of them created here, you could certainly ask the questions, why, and created with the help of our federal government dollars to help create the drugs, that how can somebody possibly justify the American people paying 2 to 3 times more for the drugs since our tax dollars are used to help create those drugs here? That shouldn't be something that should be split between Democrat and Republican, should it?
No, and in fact, one of the compromises to get the Affordable Care Act passed was to make it impossible for the federal government to negotiate and essentially force the prices of, well, not force, but through negotiation to cause the price of pharmaceuticals to reflect something like a competitive marketplace, where the buyers would exercise constraint and restraint about buying things that were too expensive. And the interesting thing is, I think all the Democratic bill wants to do is to get rid of the provision in the Affordable Care Act that made it impossible for the government to negotiate pharmaceutical drug prices. And so that's even just a marketplace kind of a reaction. You'd think conservatives would be pleased about that. But it turns out that the power of K Street and the lobbying power of the pharmaceuticals is so great that there's bipartisan concerns and worry about doing something as easy as forcing pharmaceuticals to face the marketplace and to sell drugs at something that would be a price dictated by competition.
You know, Sandy, you talk about, and what you just said, with it being that K Street is going to control that. And again, but K Street also, Democrats also have to deal with K Street. Why then can they say on the Democratic side of this, Sandy, that we need to do this, but yet on the other side of it, the Republicans shouldn't have to deal with the same thing? I mean, they're dealing with the American people who also are struggling to continue to pay these high drug prices. How can K Street's pressures be any more on the Republicans than on the Democrats?
Well, we'll see how the vote goes as to whether it's unanimous on the Democratic side. But in any case, well, K Street has more influence sometimes on a partisan basis. And maybe in this case, that's all they needed to focus on is the U.S. Senate, right? All they need to get, all they need to do is control enough Republicans in the U.S. Senate to not get to the 60% vote that's required.
Hey, Sandy, hang on. Got to go to a break. I see you, Chuck. Hang on. Short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone line and Chuck from Cedarburg. Good morning, Chuck. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I'd heard from a couple different sources that all I hear is music right now.
Well, it's going to end. Go ahead. Go ahead.
That the Trump administration had tightened up the health rules on truck drivers, and it started in January 1st of 2020, and that's really the main reason why there's a lack of truck drivers. And I had read that there's about 80,000 people who have had to lose their jobs because they couldn't meet the new tougher health standards, and that's ironically about how many the nation is short now of truck drivers, is about 80,000. Besides the COVID effect, and the COVID effect I've seen in my own lives, I lost a nan on Christmas Eve last year. Her husband died a few months afterwards. He went to a nursing home, and he never got out of there. He also died of COVID. Both of them never got their shots. And my brother is affected by COVID, and he gets panic attacks, and he can't drive at times. So it's real, and it's got effects on people. And I think it would have been better if it was handled more seriously and professionally in the beginning of 20, that there would be hundreds of thousands of people still alive today.
You know, Chuck, there's no question, and as Sandy stated, I remember clearly Donald Trump saying that this is going to go away. You know, he's been told that we not to worry, it's going to all go away. And so, you know, we can replay it and rehash it, and And we're not going to change the fact that all these people died and the impact and the damage that it's had. But the real issue is it's still here, and maybe not to the degree that it was before. And it seems like it's always going to be here, but people have to make adjustments. And the answer is not, you know, going back and pointing the fingers. It's getting people to understand, you know, just what this is. And, you know, I think it's going to be even more difficult to get people back in mask. Let me ask you, Chuck, if they ask you to go back to mask, what would be your thought?
I think maybe it should be maybe a government building or like a hospital, but for private businesses, I think they should have that choice now. I mean, unless it's really, really bad, which even in the beginning, it wasn't that bad. It was bad, but it should be a choice in a personal business. I mean, which sounds contradictory, but there was too much choice taken away, I think, at first. The problem with the economy, you know, was because of the shutdowns, really, a lot of it. But back to my first point, though, I wish one of you guys who have more ability to check into things, is that true about the truckers' rules that they had tightened them up? And that's really why there's a shortage of truckers. Now, you hear that it's, you know, Biden's fault. And I don't think that's really it. I think it's a
well, so, bad administration. I'll check on it, Chuck. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, sure. What are your thoughts?
Rules on truckers have been tightened. I do think it's the function of the federal government to protect the safety, health and safety, not only of the workers, but of the public. And for the truck, the rules that were related to the truck drivers was related to the safety of both the truck drivers and the public, because obviously if a truck driver experiences an extreme acute health risk while he's driving a truck, it can cause wreak havoc on the highways. And there's no question that the highway industry, that the truck drivers have done everything they can to maximize their income, including, you know, there was a time when amphetamines were in intense use by truck drivers, and there were all kinds of ways that truck drivers would take personal risks at the risk of others to make the money they could by driving trucks. Truck driving is a very, very important part of our economy. Trucks are more important in the United States than they are in Europe because our railroad system is much more limited here. And the last mile of delivery is always involving trucks. And in the United States, it's not just the last mile, but it's transcontinental miles. So, trucking is a very important cog in the whole supply side. And one of the problems has been that the industry itself and the business model of the industry was allowed to flourish with rules that were not adequate to protect the health and safety of its workers and the public. And so when those rules were applied, it might have created some constraints in supply. Should we relax the rules, those rules, in order to improve supply, or should we take other steps? I simply suggest that there are other steps to be taken. We don't need to relax health and safety rules in order to take the steps necessary to promote better supply. That might be a very short run thing to do, but it might also be very short-sighted. So, my view is that the businesses involved in all these various sectors that are contributing to shortage the government needs to do studies to analyze what those facets are. The government can definitely play a role in helping those industries flourish more rapidly and to be able to solve their contribution to the shortage more quickly.
So, Sandy, speaking of shortages, I don't understand why the U.S. housing shortage is where it is and going to get worse when we just came off of a burgeoning economy over since 2008, and when everything was in full bloom. Why are we now talking about a shortage in housing, affordable housing, when, man, you would think that the housing industry was booming over, you know, the last 10 to 12 years? How can there still be a shortage in housing?
Well, I think the operative word there is affordable. I was just talking to a real estate developer in the last couple of days, and it's an individual who is now specializing in the construction of affordable housing. And he pointed out to me that there's, if you just take a headcount of people who want housing and you then count the number of housing units available, there is an excess of housing units available over the number of people who are looking for housing units. But the problem is that the nature of the housing unit that the individuals are looking for is not matched by the nature of the housing units that are available. So there's been a great deal of market-based housing that's been built. In other words, rental units that are based on people paying full rents, and the level of rent has gone up rapidly during this period.
Right.
So the amount of affordable housing that's available is actually gone down. So there is a shortage of affordable housing. It's not a shortage of housing generally, but there's a shortage of affordable housing.
So Sandy, when we come back, I want to delve a little deeper into that. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You too can join us. We'll be right back. The smaller units and those kinds of things, because, you know, things are booming and money is flowing, and you don't think about those affordable houses until you get to the point where the boom period has come to an end. Is that how that works?
Well, really what happened was the cost of construction was such that if you built something at the full cost of construction, particularly as construction costs have increased rapidly in the last couple of years, The facility that you built, the residential units you built, were not affordable under the definition of affordable, meaning that people who were earning less than the median income could afford to live there, right?
Right.
And so, and the definition of affordable is lower than the median income, but it's basically defined as lower income individuals. And so, and what happened then out there in the general marketplace was that during this period of boom, the cost of rent went up as well. So as people who rent know, the lease rates were going up annually, and the number of apartments that were available that were charging a lease that could be affordable was going down every year as rents were increased. So affordable housing today is basically something that needs to be subsidized by the government. And there are affordable housing subsidized programs that are carried out pursuant to grants and incentives created by government. And so today, affordable housing is largely dependent on government conduct, government grants, and happily the marketplace is responding in that regard, but it's not responding fast.
There is definitely
a shortage of affordable housing.
And there's also a pushback from areas that don't want affordable housing in their areas. And, you know, that's been an ongoing issue and that government has attempted to address. But, you know, that, I'm sure that plays a role in it, too.
It's a little bit right. It's a little bit like redlining. It's not official redlining. But, yeah, the not in my backyard movement that doesn't want to have various kinds of things that are done by the government done in their area is very aggressive and active with respect to affordable housing. People, you know, it's probably embedded a little bit in racism. Affordable housing might be disproportionately housing people that are of color of some kind. And so, yeah, there's been a difficulty in getting affordable housing approved for construction in municipalities around the country.
And you know, Sandy, the part of it and the pushback because, and you know, people of color and those kinds of things, if people really gave it real thought, they would understand that, you know, the majority of the people who are going to be needing, you know, the affordable housing can't be people of color because of the sheer numbers, the numbers of people. But that thought process is out there, and that's enough to lead people to be against affordable housing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a sorry commentary, but there clearly is resistance in that regard. And I think that affordable housing is being constructed quite easily in homogeneous communities of homogeneous ethnicity. And it's much more difficult in urban settings where there is a lack of homogeneity with respect to ethnicity. And there's more resistance politically in that situation. So, it's important that we get affordable housing. It's interesting because this problem crops up in prosperous places as well. You can go to places like Aspen, Colorado. Aspen is a place of immense prosperity and wealth. And one of the problems is all the people need to work in restaurants and all these things that are necessary to allow people in Aspen to live like Aspenites want to live can't afford to live in or near Aspen because it's so very, very expensive. And the same thing is happening all over the West. I've got a sister who lives in Bozeman, Montana. Bozeman, Montana has suddenly become a fashionable place to live for people from California with money. And now the people who work in Bozeman, Montana are finding it very difficult to find affordable housing.
You know, Sandy, all of these different things. Here's another subject that I really wanted to hear your opinion on, and this is actually Bill de Blasio. It's commentary, and this is in The Hill. Nearly one in three Americans say it may soon be necessary to take up arms against the government. One in three? I mean, we've come to that point, Sandy, that one in three Americans believe that they may have to take up arms against the government. A majority of Americans say the U.S. government is corrupt, and almost a third say it may soon be necessary to take up arms against it, according to a new poll from the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. Two-thirds of Republicans and independents say the government is corrupt and rigged against everyday people like me, according to the poll, compared to 51% of liberal voters. Sandy, if two-thirds of Republicans or i.e. conservatives, whatever, believe that the government is totally corrupt, and at some point, and then one-third of them believe we've got to pick up arms. Sandy, I know our government is listening, right? I mean, our government is aware of this.
Well, apparently our government isn't listening to the people, because it isn't just conservatives who don't trust their government and think it's corrupt. I think that...
But I mean picking up the arms.
I know. Well, picking up the arms part, but I'm just saying there are lots of people in this country who are disaffected from government. And it was sort of the epiphany I was talking about last week that I had, the realization that government, people have lost trust in government. Right. On the left, they don't trust it because it's not delivering to them what they want. And on the right, they don't trust it because it's government. You know, they don't want government intruding into their lives at all. And on the left, they want government supporting lives to a much greater extent. And we have a broad array of people who don't trust government. I keep referencing this guy I sat next to the plane on flying from Newark down to Florida, who was talking about being armed all the time because something was bad was going to happen in America and he was going to be armed when it happened. And I realized later, he's probably one of those people who thinks he needs to bear arms potentially against the government, because in his mind, the bad thing that's going to happen is going to happen from the standpoint of government taking action. So I think it's frightening. I think that government is losing its credibility in America. And when it does, we lose the rule of law. You know, respect for government is ultimately respect for the rule of law.
You know, Sandy, I got to be honest. I'm one of those who have a difficult time when I look at things. Prime example, we've talked about several of those things this morning. We're talking about the cost of medicine And yet we see what's going on, and we have a government that seems to be powerless because its commitment to lobbyists comes before its commitment to the people. And so that doesn't mean I'm ready to pick up arms. But the fact that we're at this point, Sandy, and I don't know if in the last 100 years, if there's ever been a time where you've got people who just will not believe. And you know, Tom always comes on and says, government is the people, you know, of the people, by the people, and for the people. But it's a representative government, Sandy. And so it's the people, excuse me, who represent the government that we're talking about, right? I mean, the government isn't some, you know, some human being. You know, it's people who represent our government that we can't trust, or that we're not having enough trust in. And that's where, even when elections come into play, like we're talking about, Sandy, coming up, when those people then become slaves to lobbyists, how do you change that?
Well, I do think a fundamental problem in America is that government... The New Deal was a very important experience, but it didn't really deliver to Americans all of the value that government can provide like it provides in Europe. So, you know, we don't have broad health care available to all. We don't have education supported in the same way. We don't have pensions, child care. If we were getting government services like that, the value of government would be more apparent to the people. And to all of the people, but we don't. And so we have the progressives who are frustrated because government doesn't seem to be able to do any of those things. And we have the conservatives who don't want government to intrude in their life at all. And it's because they can argue that all that government does do is intrude in their lives in unpleasant ways. And that's because we aren't providing all these other services.
You know, hold that thought, Sandy. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, more than 70% of Republicans and more than 70% of Democrats both agree the other side are generally bullies who want to impose their political beliefs on those who disagree. And half of all Americans believe the other side is misinformed about politics because of where they get their information and news, the polls found. So when you have that kind of divide, Sandy, in our political discourse, how do you begin to even attempt to try to repair that? And what is it going to take to do that? Is it possible? Because as long as we have that kind of a divide, Sandy, I don't know, you know, where the healing comes from.
Well, you know, I think you and I are engaged in that almost daily with CJ, and I think the process is slow. I think the process is slow, but I think actually in the last couple of weeks, our phone conversations with CJ have changed their tone. And I think it's because of your willingness to, number one, have the dialogue. I think what's happened in America is that people who disagree with one another refuse to talk to one another on the grounds that it's so unpleasant that we won't engage in it. And I think it's because we've lost contact with how it is that we carry out civil conversation and how we start and carry out those conversations. And I think so that process has to be relearned. And I'm not sure that America right now is situationally going to do it. I think it takes a willingness and an interest on the part of people to build bridges to one another. And I fear that Americans not only don't want to build bridges, but we're in the process of blowing them up. And that's why part of my fearful epiphanies last week was this concern that the current movements in America could lead us to a government that would fragment, to essentially a loss of legitimacy of the federal government, which is actually what happened in the USSR in 1990. You know, the federal government of the USSR basically lost its credibility amongst the people. And when it evaporated, the country of the USSR fragmented into its republics. And we already have Texas and California, states talking about secession. We have regions of the country that believe that they are and only look at themselves as blue. We have regions of the country that can only be considered red. And we don't have any discourse between them. We have a heightened level of acrimony between them. That's what we're seeing on the floor of the U.S. Senate. That's what we're seeing on the floor of the House of Representatives. So we don't have role models showing us how to carry out civil conversation. And I'm pleased that you're one of the few who are doing that.
Hang on. Let's go to David from Mequon. Hey, good morning, David. How you doing? Thank you for the call.
Hey, good morning, Harold, Sandy. It's been a while since I've called in here. So I'm listening to the conversation, and I guess I agree with Sandy that, yes, there's no question both sides of the aisle are seeing government fail, but for very different reasons. That being said, I look at what just happened here with the whole COVID situation. And as you know, as a property owner, I think I was very frustrated. We lost a very good tenant because they were considered non-essential, putting 30 people out of work. Some that had young children. Meanwhile, you know, you could go to the Costco, Walmarts of the world, jam-packed, and they were considered essential. And I actually had another tenant that was a pet salon, and she was the only person working within her space. And she was shut down for almost 2 months, and she almost went out of business. And at the end of the day, yes, sometimes government can overreach and has consequences. And obviously, you see what can happen where things are affecting people. We see what's been going on with the nationwide permit number 12, which is essentially through the Army Corps of Engineers. And they have narrowed for the oil companies. People keep talking about the Keystone Pipeline, stuff like that. But if you look, like New York State has just now mandated all new buildings not to use natural gas, even for stoves. California, they're actually popping up now where they're saying no more new gas stations in some communities whatsoever. So you do have that portion where literally you're having the government, rather than the person, decide, hey, listen, do I want to go this direction or do I want to go that direction? And they're just leaving you no choice but to force you to go to this direction. And so that's where I think people miss the boat on some of that situation. And Europe is paying a price for it right now. If you look at Europe, they want green energy. And unfortunately, it didn't work because they were still getting a tremendous amount of supply from Russia to keep up, to keep the factories running, and now they're rushing to make deals with, you know, all sorts of countries around the world to try to offset if Russia decides to cut off the rest of natural gas. For the simple reason, again, wind and solar is nice, but it's not sustainable.
So Dave, hang on, because people can pick and choose things in the government that bother them and they don't like, but to have this divide to the degree mm-hmm. that we have it can't be good. Sandy, you want to respond to Dave?
But, you know, I think Dave and I agree on many things, but I think there are many things we don't agree on as well. And I think, but Dave was describing driving a bunch of government restrictions that had been damaging to him as a property owner and also just to similar small businesses. Those were all restrictions that were imposed by local government. So that's different than, I mean, even the state's rights people, the most conservative, are in favor of leaving that the kind of restrictions he's talking about to local governments. And in fact, all of the restrictions he was talking about with respect to California and New York were also the result of at least state restrictions, not federal restrictions. And so, you know, it's true that government, regardless of the level of government we're talking about, will do things that intrude on people's lives, intrude on people's freedoms. Some of them will be viewed as being sounder than others. And of course, the government itself is got filled with faults, but it's better than no government. You know, the alternative to government with faults is a land of no government, no rule of law, and we can look around the world and see how terribly damaging that is. With respect to Europe and green energy, you know, they've been on a path towards green energy, and obviously the path from here to there takes many steps, and they were maybe a third of the way down that path when the Ukrainian war, the war in Ukraine started, and the energy problem and the energy flow from Russia was blocked. So, yeah, it's definitely created a hiccup in the move towards green energy. But incidentally, Dave, the world and the marketplace in the world is moving towards renewable energy. It's going to take time, but there's no question that the world at large is going to move directly in the direction of renewable energy. And over time, we will probably get very far removed from the use of fossil energy. And it might become totally vestigial based on technological developments that will make it possible for wind and solar, hydrogen, other forms of renewable energy heretofore undiscovered to take the place of fossil energy. And the financial market knows that, and Wall Street knows that. And Wall Street has been penalizing Exxon and some of the other energy companies for not moving rapidly enough to essentially replace the revenue stream that is caused by fossil fuels and to replace it with something else. And those very companies... One more thing.
Okay.
Those companies are restraining the degree to which they're investing in more discovery and exploration for fossil fuel, because the expense of that is not being rewarded by Wall Street based on the notion that future supplies of oil and natural gas will not be worth as much as they are today.
Dave? All right, so Dave is gone. Sandy, let's Bill, hang on. We've got to go to a break. You know, Sandy, after it's all said and done, Dave's a prime example, and what he just had to say. You know, you said it earlier before Dave even had his conversation about no government. I mean, can you imagine what we would be dealing with in this society without having that government? So the people also, when they say they want less government, they want to pick and choose. So military is fine. That part of government they're in love with. Just don't get in my way, right? We don't want you bothering us at all, government. But it comes to that. It's a completely different ballgame. And that's what we're really dealing with, Sandy. Your expression of why it's so important to have government, and then on the other side, Dave's expression on why government is interfering and getting in the way. And so that's where this divide that we have, Sandy, even though you and Dave just had a great conversation about it, it's growing. And not only is it growing, Sandy, but it's getting ugly, right? And people can't tolerate the conversation. And that's where I think this conversation is headed and where the danger zones lie. Got to go to a break. Bill from O'Connor Mark, hang on. Everybody else on the